What really gets my dick hard is...
What?
What's going on, Metallica nerds? I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek.
The Brads from Single Podcast Theory.
And you are listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Things aren't always what they seem out here, and the devil lays waste to the best laid plans. Two musicians, one podcast, both on opposite sides of the country. Allow me to tell you a little story. Entitled The Tale of Two Tours.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
This is Clint Wells.
And if you're wondering why I sound like I'm on the phone, it's because I am Clint.
Wow. I was wondering what's going on.
Yeah, I figured you were curious about it after you called me and then thought, wow, it sounds like we're on the phone together.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm back. It's not the ideal situation.
I'm clapping. I'm clapping in my hotel room.
Welcome
back, Ethan. Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket. Where are you at today?
I am in St. Petersburg, Florida. Second to last show of this awful tour that I'm on. I'll get into that in a second. But yeah, I'm literally sitting in the alley behind the venue right now on the phone because I was telling Clint this before we started recording. I went around a couple of the venue guys and said, hey, is there a room somewhere in this venue that I could maybe use for like an hour or two, do some recording? And they're like, well, the only extra one is the green room, but it's been boarded up by the fire department because they only have one exit out of there apparently, and they said it's not enough for 30 people to get out of.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, how about one?
Yeah, no shit. We are Legion. You are in more ways than one, you are on the Mad Max End of the World tour.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, without going into a crazy amount of detail, because I don't want to give away the book that I'm currently writing about all this experience. Yeah, basically this tour was not even close to what I expected, and it was like I'm on a bus and that's cool, but like in those terms, it's like when you say the word roughing it, a lot of times people are like, oh, poor guy, you're on a bus. But there's like 11 people on the bus, all the gears in the bays, all the luggage is on the bus in the spare bunks. There are now not one but two children under the age of 7 on the bus that was unannounced. So I've been trying to like get some extra rest, and babies are crying at night. Nobody cares that the bunk area should be silent and people are sleeping. And so there's like shouting matches, and whether it's actual arguments or they're arguing about a basketball game or something.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, it's kind of like a long story short. There's an etiquette on the bus, and if other people are following it, it doesn't matter how nice the bus is. It's a war zone if people aren't kind of living by the
etiquette. Yeah, and there's been numerous times in this tour that I've gone at least 3 days without showering. Not by choice, but just because that's how it is.
Isn't that the reggae way?
It must be. Well, I'll tell you what. If my reggae record that I'm about to record next week was Paul? If let's just hypothetically say it explodes. It's my black album, right?
Right.
I'm definitely not going to do certain things that are on this tour. I'm going to have hotel rooms on days off so everyone can feel clean and refreshed and you can get rest, you know.
Imagine that.
I don't think I've had a full night of sleep other than one night when I said, fuck it, and I went and got my own hotel room.
Well, here's the deal. If you've been listening the past few weeks, you've heard the saga unfolding. Ethan and I are both on tours, different sides of the country. We've done what we are calling Metal Up Your Podcast Radio the last 2 weeks. And this week we're continuing on with our Year in the Life of Metallica series. We're going to do 1986. If you're joining us for the first time, you may be scratching your head and wondering what the fuck is going on. Ethan and I are two touring musicians, obviously, who dedicate every Monday. We put out an episode about our favorite metal band, Metallica. And which just May just got super dicey with us. But and even today I didn't know it was going to happen until the last minute. But we're here. We did it. We persevered.
It really is surprising that a situation like this has not come up before. Clint and I have been able to make it happen when he's in like Arizona and I'm in Romania or something.
We have.
But here we are in the great country of America and we can't make it happen.
It was the great American giant who doth slay us.
That's exactly.
Well, let's get through some of this housekeeping stuff. We're going to read some emails, and then we're going to burn down the entire year of 1986. We've got copious notes. I'm excited to talk about it. First of all, we have this thing called Patreon. If you like the show and you want to support the show, you can do that by going to patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. It's all sorts of cool shit you can get over there, like our EP, and we're doing giveaways next month and all that stuff. We got a new patron this week, my new friend Mark Ferguson, who I hung out with in Redwood City the other day. Lovely, lovely man and his girlfriend, Vanessa.
Awesome.
We posted pictures of all that stuff because I know you got to hang out with Sarah and Pete and Gene in New York, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, I got to see all three of them in New York and we got a couple of drinks together before the show. They came to the show, hung out afterwards a bit. They were obviously kind as always and purchased a couple of my beverages, much to my reluctant attitude. I was like, no. But they were very kind and got me some drinks, and we had an awesome, awesome time. Always great to see them.
Were you like in the scene in So I Married an Axe Murderer where they're like, no, I'll get it. No, I'll get it. No. Negatory good buddy.
No.
And then the chick's like, I'll get it. And they're like, okay.
All right, fine.
Well, we love hanging out with our fans when we're on the road, it's especially when we're on a tough tour like the one Ethan's on currently. It's something to do, and it brightens our day to go say hi to people who are on the ride with us and who love Metallica. So you can
agreed.
Go to
you
can go to all of our socials and see all pictures of all that crap. We put that out there for the world to see. We're not shy about it.
Not at all.
We got a bitchin' website, metalupyourpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can listen to episodes and all your wildest dreams will come true. The best and most direct way to get a hold of us is through our email address, which is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We read a handful every week because we've decided that we wanted to, and it's our goddamn show. You want to go into the old...
Yeah, we do what we want.
We do what we want. I'm Randy Watson.
I'm Randy Watson.
Having said all of that, let's take a little peekaboo into the old email corner.
I'm so down.
You want to go up first?
Yeah, sure thing. All right, our first email is from Dylan Heim. He says, hey guys, everybody have a good week. I just wanted to say super quick, I'm dealing with a bad breakup and I've been wicked depressed, but you're seriously helping me help me out with it. Even going back to episodes I've heard before is helping. Thank you for providing some badly needed laughs for me, even in the darkest point of my life so far. You two are the best ever. Well, thank you. We're sorry you're going through some stuff, man. We're glad to be here for you. He goes on to say, it sucks Ethan's been missing out, but Clint, you've been doing a kick-ass job holding your own. And the Metal Up Your Podcast Radio this week was really awesome. I'm a musical sponge, so showing me a few songs I've never heard was really awesome. I'm curious as to what Ethan would play. I think you guys should do something you should do something like that more. Anyways, I hope you guys get back together soon, because as good as Clint did alone, it's not the same without Ethan.
I 100% agree.
I know. Clint and I talked about it a lot last week when I was in New York, again, without a place to do any recording. And it really was bumming me out. Like, it's like you're in this band and you've put so much into this band and it's yours. It's you and this other guy. It's your thing. You started it all. And then all of a sudden you have to miss a show or two. And it's just heartbreaking. And I just, but I totally agree with Dylan. Clint definitely held it down, did a great job. And to answer your question, yes, we will be doing more of these. If anything, it just got me more excited just to do one randomly on my own. So you guys can maybe hear a top 10 list of something I'm into or some, whatever the theme may be. I will definitely be doing a radio episode for you guys somewhat soon.
Yeah, I think we're going to do at least one a month, maybe even a couple. And we're going to alternate. So
yeah, for
that'll
sure.
be cool. Thanks, Dylan. Cyrus writes, Clint, your two radio episodes have been fantastic. I don't think part two is too out of the normal. We all love Metallica very much. That's true. But music is our love. It's sad that people believe there's no new good music out there. As I get older, I listen to less new music, but it's not because I don't believe there's new stuff. It's just that I'm discovering so much old stuff that I never heard. Muddy Waters, T-Bone Walker, Fats Domino, etc. Shit, man, I still feel like I haven't quite even figured out all the Beatles records. I totally get that.
Exactly.
He says, thanks again for this great podcast. Y'all have said it many times, but to reiterate, music is such an amazing thing in life. It's motivated and saved me many times. Your podcast is a continuation of that love of music that lots of us have. All of us have that listen to your show appreciate what you and Ethan have given with love to all of us that love and cherish music. Well, that was like a poem.
Yeah, it really was.
He says, no matter how long you guys continue this Metallica ride, I think as musicians and music lovers, you should continue podcasting on some level about music. You have an obvious passion and chemistry that only adds to the music community. Podcasts about Metallica, guitars, general love of music, The Clash, etc. Just keep adding more to the music universe, Cyrus. Thank you, Cyrus.
Thanks, Cyrus. Well, you can bet that whenever I do a radio episode, that there will be some Clash involved for sure.
There will be some Rock the Casbah. That's his favorite Clash song.
Rob the Cashbox. All right. Next email is short and sweet from our friend Gene Froman, who I just saw last weekend. Hey, guys, we're really digging the radio episodes. I don't often get a chance to listen to vibe up to new music, so I appreciate you sharing some non-Metallica tunes every now and then. Thanks, and safe travels. Thank you, Gene.
She told me on an Instagram Live the other day that she didn't like my Lana Del Rey song.
Ooh.
Shots and fired.
Fighting words, Gene. Those are fighting words.
No, I appreciated the honesty. A few people wrote in and said, yeah, they didn't like my more pop-oriented stuff.
Yeah.
But, well, what can I say? Okay. I can't please everybody.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, to each their own. You have your taste, and if something Clint plays or I might play isn't your favorite topping on that slice of pizza, then that's okay.
No problemo. David Bill writes.
Yeah,
what were you going to say?
Nothing.
Yeah, we nothing. David Bill says, Clint, enjoyed the episode. Looking forward to more of these bonus episodes. Love to hear a Slayer radio bonus episode to go along with the final tour. Enjoyed your talk about Ghost. Also, glad you said it, because I won't watch a Serbian film either. A few people wrote in about the Serbian film.
I saw that.
We'll read a little more from our friend Faroe later, but he says, Cannibal Corpse, I'm sure you were joking when you said the dude is obsessed and will kill. He says, I wasn't sure what singer you were talking about. The first singer was Chris Barnes. What's funny is he's actually a vegan pita lover, part-time conspiracy theorist, full-time stoner chill guy that I don't think has a bad bone in his body. Just an active imagination. He's been out of Cannibal Corpse for 25 years doing 6 Feet Under. Check out the song Feasting on the Blood of the Insane. It's so brutally good. The newer singer is George Corpse Grinder Fisher, another guy that seems like the friendliest guy in the world except on record and on stage. He's a master claw machine player who wins stuffed animals on demand and loves Disney World. Ice-T described these guys best when talking about doing Cop Killer with Body Count. He says, Ice-T's not shooting any police. It's a protest song, and these albums are characters made up for a story, not much different than those in a horror film. I have a hunch Ghost is much the same. I dig it all. Peace, David Bill. Well, those are good points, and I, of course, was joking. however, someone who's dedicated that much energy into that kind of fantasy, there is a smoke and fire situation there, isn't there?
I would imagine so, yeah. I mean, that stuff, I mean, yeah, you could have a creative mind and come up with these stories and stuff like that, but there's got to be something in there that's a little dark.
Well, because
I'd imagine,
right? It really is like, What I did is I went and read about 20 lyrics from across their entire career. So I guess I got a little bit of both of these singers. And basically every song is about like killing someone and then doing a bunch of weird stuff with their bodies. Now, if I was like, right. hey, I'm a painter and I've devoted 45, it's my life's work. I've got it all in this warehouse. I didn't even sell it. I just made it for me. And someone's like, oh shit, you mind if I see it? Can I see your life's work? Yeah, sure. Come on in. And what if every painting was like the bones of children?
Right.
It'd be
yeah.
like, you've been doing this
like
your
the
whole life.
Food.
No, it's like, no, dude, but I'm vegan and I like PETA and I love Disneyland. And my favorite cartoon is the Care Bears. They're like, yeah, but your life's work was spent painting the bones of children. Yeah, well, I have an active imagination. Do you?
Well, I mean, that's why they call me Clint Corpse Grinder Wells.
It's like you have a really active imagination in this one really tiny little sphere of just mutilating bodies.
Can you imagine if your nickname was Corpse Grinder? Someone's like, hey man, what's up? My name's John. You're like, oh, hey, man, I'm Corpse Grinder.
Hey, dude, it's me, George Fisher. Friends call me Corpse Grinder, though. Life's work dedicated to singing songs about disemboweling children. Hey, man, it's an active imagination. Okay,
oh,
anyway,
Lord.
Thanks for the insightful comment, David. We're of course, mostly just kidding. Mostly, not totally, just mostly.
Mostly, but not really.
I mean, we should check in on that. We should check in. We should see if there are bones under that dude's house, for sure.
100%, yeah. It's going to be like, you remember the movie The Burbs with Tom Hanks?
Totally.
Where they think that dude's burying bodies in his backyard.
But hey, Pinocchio, like where do you think you're going?
That's Corpse Grinder's house.
for sure.
Oh, man. Okay, moving on here. Where are we at? Daryl Davies writes, hey, guys. I've been a Patreon supporter for a while, and I'm loving the EP. I had a question for Clint on the Outlaw Torn. Would you mind sharing a couple details of the arrangement you used for that rendition? I find myself singing along to it, and I would love to play it at home on my guitar. I think you mentioned that you used some odd tunings. It would be awesome if you could share in the chord progressions you used. I know how to play the original version, but this is so unique in a different way, different in an amazing way. Keep up the great work, guys. Also looking forward to having Ethan back on the podcast this week after a couple fun episodes of Nova Podcast Radio. Well, I'm back. Love that you talked up Ghost, by the way. Daryl from Toronto, Canada, New Jersey. Thanks, Daryl.
Yeah, dude. I honestly don't know what the tuning was on that. It's one of those cases where I was just playing the chord and needed a few things a little scooted. So I just tuned it. You've probably done that before, Ethan, right? Like you just had to tune it
it
work.
Yeah, or like your finger can't stretch that far, so you drop a string
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly. What I can do, Daryl, is I can go back into the session files and find the stems of just the acoustic part and maybe send that to you so you can hear it. Maybe you can pick it out. Or I can maybe pick it out for you. But I just played it a whole step lower than what it is on the record so I could sing it. And I just think it's mostly that drony one, like D minor, I think. I really don't know. I'd have to go
right.
Look it up.
Well, it'll be all part of our Nova Podcast tab book we're going to release in like 5 years.
Right. Only to the patrons.
Right.
You're the only ones who have the goddamn record.
Exactly.
Lou Delia writes, what's up, brothers? Just wanted to say thank you. I jumped online with the Jim Florentine episode, another fellow Jersey guy, and he writes, Dude, the whole do you, is he joke has completely overrun my entire band.
Oh, good.
We changed our group text to do you. And now anytime anyone says anything, we're just hammering that Florentine shit. Anyway, Lou says he's been hooked since the Florentine episode, picking and choosing older episodes while staying current with the new Monday shows every week. As a musician, I really appreciate your insight on a lot of subjects, and as a fellow guitar player, I can't wait for the gear episode. I think James has had consistently the coolest guitars around. I think that's true, but Kirk's old greenie, I think, smokes anything James has.
Nothing's rad. I mean,
his $2 million greenie.
I still think, as far as Metallica world concerned, that the Black Album era all black ESP is still my favorite ever.
How about the one with the man turning into the wolf on the inlay?
That one's great.
Shit.
Yeah, that one's great.
Well, we're gonna do a whole episode on all that. Let's see. He talks about he first saw them on the Poor Retouring Me tour in 98. I was 15 and had floor seats. I remember they did this really cool acoustic session where they played Low Man's Lyric, Last Caress, and Four Horsemen. I loved it, but my friend's older brothers I was there with hated it. Well, of course. One of them actually told me on the walkout that wasn't Metallica. Did they?
Wow.
What does that even mean?
Come on. Those aren't truths.
I'm pretty sure it was Metallica playing it, but no, but that's not Metallica, see?
But it was an acoustic guitar, and Metallica doesn't use those. Trust me, I've listened to Ride the Lightning before.
But I thought Metallica was James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, Kirk Hammett, and Jason Newsted. No, no, it's not.
No. So they cut their hair.
They cut their hair
and use acoustical guitars.
I don't even recognize these buttholes anymore. All right, he says, I got on the ride that night and haven't gotten off since. Some of my highlights are both Atlantic City shows. He's talking about the Orion Festival, I suppose, where they played Ride the Lightning and the Black Album from back to front, and the Apollo show I won tickets from the fan club to. I was third row in front of James. Still, the 98 show was definitely something special. You always remember your first time, I guess. And then he writes, nice story. Tell it to the Reader's Digest. He says, the Albany show in October will be my 11th show. I'll be rocking my Metal Up Your Podcast shirt and taking my wife to her first. Very cool. There's a small chance we're going to be at that show, dude.
There's a small chance.
He says, I said all that to say I love this band, and you guys have made that love grow even more. I didn't think I could be more obsessed with Metallica, but you guys have taken it to another level. Also really enjoyed Clint's Instagram live videos. I pop in and out of them at work whenever I can. Thank you again. Lou from Parsippany, New Jersey. New Jersey. He writes, P.S. I like Saint Anger. Don't delete that.
Ooh. By the way, you should have seen, there's some random dude just walked by me in this alley, and I was doing this voice.
Fun.
Kind of laughed, and the dude just kind of looked over like, what is that guy's problem?
Dude, I'm doing a bit for the show that you haven't heard yet that involves some maniacal laughter, and I had to do a few takes of it to get it right, and then like a lull of it, I heard... sir, there's been some complaining that you've been laughing loudly in your
Did you really? That's amazing. Yeah. That's awesome. God.
Okay.
Oh, man. Well, our next email it might be our longest we've ever had in the history of Melford Cast, from Eric Frazier. Love the last two episodes. Great stuff. Looking forward to hearing more in the future. What do you have to say about that, Clint?
Hey, man, dude, short and sweet. I love it. No problem.
I love it.
Why don't you go ahead and read the next one, too? Not enough airtime. Right. Everyone's starving to hear you talk, dude. They're fucking tired of my ass.
I know. They're finally here. You know, they unfortunately get to hear like a lo-fi version of it. But don't worry. Next week, I'm going home. By the time this episode comes out, I'll be back home, about to start my record with Paul Moak, and I will be back at HQ1, ready to record whenever I damn well please. Yeah, you like that, motherfuckers? All right. Next thing is from Tim Rasmussen. Hi, Clint. And welcome back, Ethan. Great job. I'm still putting out something every week despite being out hard on the road. Been good listening to your ramblings and picks. Well, not what I... Sorry, my phone is tiny. I'm reading all these off my phone, so they're really, really tiny. Well, not what I listen to usually, and lacking in the metal department, it was cool to hear your choices this week, which I think after hearing all your SoundCloud tracks you regularly upload definitely influence your style, so that was cool. I agree with that. Hope the touring is going great. Wish I was doing the same. Soon, my friend, soon. If you're in the UK touring anytime, get in touch. Come get a nice cup of tea and then crack open the whiskey. Wow, that sounds good.
How about we crack open the whiskey and then have a nice cup of tea?
And throw in some crumpets, then I am on a plane.
Tea and scrumpets? Scones? He's got a mouthful of pennies.
I just want some tea and crumpets.
They're scrumptious crumpets.
As scrumptious, I really like them. And I wouldn't mind if we could, after eating tea and crumpets and cracking up the whiskey, maybe we can just head on up and go see Stonehenge.
I'd love to smoke opium with a giant caterpillar on top of a giant mushroom.
Listen to what the flower people say. We, by the way, whenever we get around to doing these movie reviews, Spinal Tap has to be one of the first ones we do.
Yeah, totally. Well, oh my God, speaking of that, Ethan. So I've been trying not to buy too much vinyl on this trip, you know, I've been trying to be a responsible adult.
Right.
But I have been looking for one record. It's like been my holy grail record, and I don't want to buy it off Discogs. I want to find it in the goddamn wild, and I found it. Guess what it is? It's coming
to do it.
The Coming to America soundtrack.
No, you found it?
I found it, and this motherfucker charged me $16 for it and would not budge.
I feel like at this point, we've kind of dove into Coming to America world. I feel like it's worth it, man. I'd pay up to 20, maybe.
So we have what's called the golden hour, which is the hour before the show, where We all crawl out of whatever dungeons we've been in, and we put our show clothes on, and we have one drink, and we spend time together as a band before we hit the deck, right? And we bought a record player for the bus now. So because we're all, a lot of us are vinyl freaks, so whatever we're buying, we're like, oh, the Golden Hour, we'll just listen to what we've been buying. I've been pretty much just commandeering the Golden Hour, straight up Coming to America exclusively.
That's amazing. Please tell me that the Randy Watson version...
It's not, dude.
It's not. Oh. I mean, I suppose they didn't actually record that. He just did that live while they were filming, but how good would that be if you had...
You know what Randy I'm going to do? I know, dude. Like, I would take a whole part two of the soundtrack of just Randy Watson doing tunes. And in fact,
because
I'm editing this week, I'm putting a marker here, and we're going to listen to that scene again for fun.
Yes, we are. Please throw that shit in there. That boy's good.
I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own Mr. Randy Watson. Yes, Randy Watson.
That boy is good.
Mm-hmm. Good and terrible.
And Reverend Brown. 3 years for the Reverend. This man's been my Reverend since I was a little boy, and I love him dearly. You're a very special man. Reverend Brown. Reverend Brown. It feels so lovely to be here tonight. What a beautiful audience. Give yourselves a round of applause. You're so lovely. Everyone's so lovely. And while you're in the clapping mood, I'd like to give a big round of applause to my band, Sexual Chocolate. Sexual Chocolate. They play so fine, don't you agree?
I believe the children are our future.
Thank you.
Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride. Make it easier.
Some of the good stuff, right? Coming up.
Want a Coke? Join the show?
Enjoy, young man.
I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, you can't take away my dignity. Because the greatest love of all inside of me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sexy chocolate!
Oh my God. Okay. Another thing I want to say about Tim Rasmussen is he actually sent me, he's into like hardcore death metal, and he sent me about 6 or 7 tunes for me to check out. And we didn't mention that in the email, but I wanted him to know I duly noted, I wrote it down, I'm going to check it out. We'll see what happens. All right.
Nice.
Frank Drums 11 writes, Ethan, what's up, brother? He wants you to do it. You do it.
What's up, brother?
There it is. My name is Frank, and I'm from Long Island, New York, New Jersey. Been listening since October. Finally got to writing in. I work nights and basically drive the whole time, so you guys have been my go-to while working and have given me something fun and enjoyable to look forward to every week. My favorite album is Justice, and yes, I do get down pretty hot and heavy with Load and Unload. And then he writes in parentheses, Paul? I got a question no one's really talked about, and I would love to hear your guys' opinion on it. He says, originally the third disc of Hardwired was supposed to be the demos. Do you think we will ever get these? And aren't you guys dying to hear them too? I love the podcast and love Metallica. It's awesome you guys get together, take time out of your lives to create this masterpiece of a podcast every week. Keep it going, and thank you. Sincerely, Frank. P.S. Ethan, Outlaw Torn.
Never heard of it.
That's old school.
The demos, here's kind of my thought on that. because they recorded this record at HQ, they developed these songs from nothing at HQ. I almost feel like the demos aren't really demos. Like, I feel like what maybe started as a demo ended up becoming the final product. I could be wrong, but I would imagine
that's true for any song. What started as the demo became the final thing.
Well, you know what I mean, but the actual session was the same.
Oh,
exact
right,
thing.
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they started on like, hey, James, like, hey, I have this riff. Lars is like, cool, I got this drum part. And they build it, and eventually it became the actual recording of what we hear on the record.
Right.
Now, I'd imagine there's a shitload of just clips of just Hetfield riffs with Lars playing, you know, before they actually you know, piece these songs together. But if there are official demos out there that they would release one day, I'd be curious to hear them, but I don't know if it could top old Hardwired.
Well, there's like a three-hour documentary of the making of Hardwired that includes much of that information. And then you're right. Like,
right.
For like, I know that for Now That We're Dead in particular, they were calling basically the demo phase pre-production, where they were just sort of hashing shit out in the room while recording everything to tape. And even they kept like some of the drums, I think, for Now That We're Dead because they just couldn't beat it.
And, right, exactly.
And I'll say, I've been kind of disappointed by the Metallica demo. Like, the Load and Reload demos to me were like the Holy Grail. I was like, holy shit, is this going to be like an acoustic version of James doing Fixer, like working it out? They sound pretty much exactly like the recordings, except instead of lyrics, he's just mumbling.
Right, yeah,
because
exactly.
he writes his lyrics last, which I find really fascinating.
Yeah, you'll see him do that in some of those documentaries, behind-the-scenes things, where he's writing, like, while they're in the middle of tracking their actual record, or he's about to do vocals and he has to finish something or whatever, which I kind of dig too, because it puts you in the moment of that song and that feeling of whatever the song's about, and maybe you'll get more inspired than if you were to sit on your couch with an acoustic guitar. You know,
that's true, dude. I mean, I've never done it. Maybe I should try that. Actually, you know what? I'm doing that with the song you wrote for Lunar Satan.
Nice.
Because you're pretty much have that finish, and then I'm just going to write the song over it.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be
sure.
the first time I ever did that.
There you go.
All right, cool. Well, good question, Frank. Thanks, dude.
I feel like you should read this next one because it's specifically addressed to you.
Okay, all right. Robert O'Rourke, who's our good friend Faro, who has also guested on Alpha Metallica, I think a few times. Real insightful dude, big Metallica fan. He writes, "Yo, Clint, congrats on another fine episode of Metal Up Your Podcast Radio." And he's a huge horror movie fan. So he wrote, "Obviously, I've got to chime in about what you said about being a horror fan and refusing to see a Serbian film. Thank you. I knew my wife and I were not alone. Man, I've got a friend who has seen it like 8 times. This is me. This is Clint talking. And
I haven't even watched the trailer because everyone's talking about how like they're walking out of theaters. I'm like, yeah, I'm cool.
Well, there are some movies like that are on lists like this, like Martyrs, some of these French extremes movies, like Martyrs and Frontiers, Hot Tension, Salo, that are on these lists of like the most disgusting movies ever. I've seen all those. Now, what I do, though, because I'm not a total goddamn masochist, is I go and read the synopsis on Wikipedia. Well, I read the synopsis on Wikipedia of Serbian film and was like, oh, I didn't even watch the trailer. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So just to give you a little bit of context there, he says, a few years ago, and it ties into what we were saying about Cannibal Corpse. Now, my friend Ryan, who I love and who I know is a good person, he's watched Serbian film like 7 or 8 times. And I got to say,
crazy.
I know he's a good guy, but the fact that he's done that, it does give me a little bit of pause on him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't...
Yeah, for sure.
You can't divorce what someone puts into themselves or their output creatively from, like, who they are, can you? Is that all sectioned off so cleanly like that? It can't be, right?
I don't think so, but I don't know.
Okay, he says... Go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
All right,
No, you go on. Read the email.
Randy, what?
Randy Watson. Mr. Randy Watson, yes!
He says, a few years ago in Chicago at a film festival, a few different classic horror movies were shown before the city premiere of something called a Serbian film. He says, my wife takes no shit and demanded our friend who was emceeing the show tell us what it was about, and he ran down the list. My wife said, hell no, and we left. At first, I was kind of bummed since a bunch of horror friends were staying, but she laid the hammer down, and rightly so. The guy who put the show on received death threats about showing that movie, which that's insane.
That's crazy.
Let's see. He says, that garbage just isn't what horror is about as far as I'm concerned. Currently on a massive kick of the MGM Midnight Movies collection, going through all the discs I have under that banner, which is mostly drive-in B-movies from American and international pictures from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Good shit, bro. Cheers and keep it solid work, Bob. I agree. I mean, I guess I can't really say what horror movies are about for everybody. That would be insane of me to try to do. For me, it's just the gross out gore porn shock bullshit without any really like artistic merit, in my opinion. It's just, that's just not my ride. It's not my deal.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Like, and you're way more of a horror movie guy than I am. You know, I mostly like either the super old classics or like 80s kind of like where it became, you know, where like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street got a little silly.
Yeah.
You know, like Dream Warriors, I love, you know.
Oh, yeah. Dream Warriors is great.
That kind of stuff. But when it comes down to like, okay, this literally is going to give me nightmares, and this is just flat out wrong, like what is happening on the screen. I've never been able to hang with that stuff, man. It's just personal preference, I guess.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, we got two more.
All right, here we go. Joe B. It's Clint. Let me tell you how my morning started. I felt like shit. I couldn't get out of bed. Was sloppy all throughout my workout, and almost called in sick to work. By the time the Lana Del Rey song ended, I was ready to push through and make the best of it. I haven't driven a car in over a decade. Wow. So I haven't had that what we'll play next radio experience in just as long. And it felt killer. I liked all the songs he picked, particularly West Coast. Wow. And the Reality Suite track. Our friends Reality Suite, who just finished their Pledge Music thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saving the day, he says. She said. To piggyback onto the probably dozens of song recommendations you'll now receive, I have to share the latest from one of my favorite bands. Tribulation is a horror-themed death metal band from Sweden. Sweden! based on the other music you both have talked about, written and played, I think you'll dig. If you do like it, their album, The Children of the Night, is a masterpiece. P.S. Hi, Ethan. Hope the road is treating you well. Well, maybe not. And we miss you. I don't know how I missed that you were in New York City. Damn it. Well, sorry, I was there for a day. But, yeah, this is kind of a pure alley, Quinn, because this is about your episode of radio. But that's cool that a Lana Del Rey track pushed you through a workout. I would imagine, you know, it would be something more like, you know, maybe something off of Seasons in the Abyss. But Lana Del Rey works, too.
Yeah, it's great for feeling like you just did a bunch of heroin on a treadmill. It's perfect for that.
It's perfect for that, yeah.
Well, of course, I appreciate the sweet sentiment, Joe, and glad that it turned your day around. Really happy to hear that. All right, our last email from Sarah Sobeck, our friend. She writes about how it was good to see Ethan. I think some of this stuff is a little more personal stuff. But she hung out with you, and she said it was really good to see you, her and her husband, Pete. She says, Clint, you've been doing a good job on the podcast, even though I can hear in your voice that you miss Ethan. Was it the sob? Was it the sobbing that gave it away?
It was the sobbing, or maybe the fluttering like lip thing.
She says, "Let's see here." She says, "I can." Although I've already loved your deep cuts from the first episode, it's always great to hear your perspective. I love the cuts from the second episode. My eyes, ears, and heart are always open to things I've not heard before. Hearing Chris Cornell actually made me cry a little on my way to work, but that's what music does, touches us, and I so much appreciate you reminding me and invoking those feelings. Thanks again for making Monday suck less. See you again soon, Sarah. That's very sweet, Sarah. Thank you.
Very nice, Sarah. Awesome. And speaking of Sarah, I know a lot of people did this, but the Metallica Day of Service, I saw that Sarah and Pete posted photos doing it with Gene up in New York, and man, I can't wait till they do that in Nashville.
I know. Lars wrote an essay today that just came out, kind of about, you know, how much progress they made, and it had all the facts about how many, like, you know, tens of thousands of families are going to get fed from that day, and
yeah,
it was a great success, cool. Man. I mean, I think that's going to be happening every year as long as we're Metallica fans.
And I also love that the boys in Metallica all were obviously involved in this, like, obviously one-on-one with people. In all the areas they live in or have a extra house in, or like James was in Colorado, Lars was in the Bay Area, Robert was in L.A., and Kirk was in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So really cool. They kind of repped Metallica really around, you know, a lot of North America.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And I wrote today on Twitter, you know, it's just I'm ever proud to be a Metallica fan. They make me proud.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for the emails. We love hearing from all our fans. You guys can write in meltyourpodcastshow@gmail.com, and we might read your thing on the thing.
We might do it.
Let's get out of here.
Let's do it.
Hey, this is Ethan and Clint from Metal Up Your Podcast, and we want to talk to you about something we love called Patreon.
That's right. Patreon is a way for fans of the show to give back to the show, to donate money that helps us in quality and content. And not only that, but we've actually come up with all sorts of fun incentives to give back to you for supporting the show.
Exactly. For instance, if you donate $5 or more, you get access to Cover Our World Blackened, which is the official Metal Up Your Podcast Metallica cover EP.
That's right, and that's the only way to get it. In addition to the EP, we also give you priority email access, meaning we'll read your email first on the show. We give you early access to Patreon-exclusive merchandise, Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and any other side projects Ethan and I might be involved in.
There's all sorts of things you can look at on there and you can donate to. Go check it out, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. How do you spell that, Clint?
patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And if you really think about it, $5 a month for an entire year, that's really just like a cup of coffee a month. So go check it out. Thanks, everyone. Peace.
Adios.
We meet again, dark passenger. Like ships in the night, our two brave co-hosts weather the stormy change of touring logistics. Will they make it through to the end? Only God and Satan and time will tell.
So here we are back in our Year in the Life of Metallica series, where we, in excruciating detail, burn down the year that Metallica had. Now, 86 is fun. A lot's going on. We're balls deep, as they say, in puppets. And I tell you what was a really good companion to getting some of these facts was revisiting the Back to the Front book. We did a whole episode on that with our friend Tom Cui.
There's a wealth of information in that book.
It sure is. It sure is. Well, let's get started here with January. So what's happening here is Lars is at Peter Minch's place. I guess Peter Minch, who's one of their managers, along with Cliff Bernstein, has a place in Europe, in London. So he's hanging, and I think when Lars would go hang over there, he would stay at Peter's house or whatever. So they start planning and booking the tour with Sharon and Ozzy, and I think it was mostly with Sharon.
Yeah, for sure.
And while he was over there, he was actually doing prep. You remember? Have you ever seen pictures of that photo shoot Lars did where he's like holding a bunch of puppets? Like they were trying to do like he's the master of puppets. Horrible idea.
For sure.
But he was over there doing shit like that, like doing press for the album that's about to come out. The other three dudes are in the Bay Area hanging out. Kirk even says later that he didn't even know about the Ozzy tour until Lars got back. And they were just they were at the house on Carlson, and Lars is like, "Oh yeah, when we go on tour with Ozzy, we're going to do this." And Kirk's like, "We're going on tour with fucking Ozzy Osbourne."
What? You've been working on this for how long? And you're now just telling him? Well, he probably knew that nobody was going to say no to that.
Yeah, and they're like, "Well, we don't care what Kirk we don't care what Kirk thinks." The poor dude.
Hey Kirk, can you come down off riding your unicorn, and we can tell you about some news happening, some touring news coming up?
Kirk, come down from that tree, dude. He's always climbing trees. What's he doing up there? Stop it. James talks about James designed the concept of the cover for Puppets, but I found this really weird. His original idea was the cover being Howdy Doody lying in the gutter with track marks running up and down his arms. Can you imagine that?
I mean, that almost sounds like a pretty offensive punk rock band doing something like that.
Like DRI or something?
Yeah, something like that. Dead Kennedys. Or Cannibal Corpse, even. Howdy Doody's guts would be spilled out or something if it was Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah, they'd be just like playing with entrails and shit.
Yeah.
Feeding on the blood of the insane or whatever that song was called. But of course, James probably showed that to his management, and I'm sure they, in a very diplomatic way, were like, let's maybe do something a little more classy. And so James did the crosses, you know, and he jokingly says it was the first thing him and Lars agreed on. And then the idea for the strings coming down was Peter Minch again, one of their other two managers. Artwork done by the art department at Elektra and heavily influenced by early Maiden covers and sleeves with the anecdotes and silly names. Like the thank yous begin with roaring hella mega styling cheers.
Okay.
That is some serious Bay Area mid-80s stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's probably the sound of the trues.
That's the true war call. The roaring hella mega styling cheers. Honestly, man, you know, like in Coming to America, you see, I love the Lord. And if loving the Lord's wrong, I don't want to be right. It's like, if that's the call of the trues, do we want to be trues?
Not sure. Hey, Clint, what are you thinking about doing this afternoon? Maybe Roaring Hell Omega Styling? You know what that sounds like? It's a Red Hot Chili Peppers album.
I was going to say
it's... Maybe Nikita's their new album called Roaring Hell Omega Styling.
It either sounds like a late 80s Chili Peppers record or like the way to order a hamburger In-N-Out. Hey, I'll have a double-double, but can I get it, some people get it animal style. I'll give it Roaring Hell Omega style.
You guys still do that? Okay, great.
It's just like shavings. It's just shavings of Cliff Burton's beard, like the sprinkle on the burger.
And actually, while we're at it, can I get my fries, Roarin' Hella Omega, but not Stylin'?
Yeah. 86 for Stylin'. I'll take Roarin' Hella Omega Cheers. Is that cool?
Yeah, I want in a side of Cheers, actually, for me.
The artwork was done by Don Brodigam, and the original pass had the more feminine pointy nails. You've seen pictures
That's
of
right.
that, right?
That's in the back of the front book.
Now, they're just getting all this shit ready. They're preparing the artwork. They are preparing the stage. The stage set was another one of Peter's ideas. I'm beginning to see why he might be their manager. It was Peter's idea to have the crosses extend from the, like, because the backdrop has the crosses, but then they actually brought 3D, like, you know, real crosses
right.
that sort of come out on the stage. Pretty ambitious for kind of where they were.
Yeah, for sure.
And James says that the Puppets Tour was their first tour with an actual tour bus.
That's so cool.
I mean,
that would have been so exciting for them. Like they haven't even released what is to become their biggest record ever. And they're on a tour bus. Like, wow, we've made it, guys. Like, it doesn't get any better than this.
Do you remember what it felt like when you got on your first tour bus?
Uh-huh. And, yeah, I got in my bunk, and I thought I was going to die that night because I woke up in a coffin, and, like, I couldn't get out. And I was – because, like, we hit, like, rumble strips or something. And I remember, like, reaching my arms out to every – wall except for where the curtain was, and I was like, I'm trapped. But all I have to say, it was insanely exciting, and I thought, wow, I never thought in a million years I would be on a tour bus and I can sleep all night and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, after, man, I really paid my dues in Vans.
Oh yeah,
just after just slumming it for a decade, I was just, to me it felt like going to heaven, dude.
Oh yeah,
and
sure.
I remember one of the dudes I was with. Remember my very first night. They stopped in like at a grocery store to like get groceries for the bus, and they were like, "Yeah, do you want to get any groceries for the bus?" I was like, "No, I'm cool. I didn't know you needed anything like that." And they were like, "Well, you might want to get like some bread and like some sandwich shit or some, you know." I was like, "No,
microwavable stuff."
Yeah, like it just didn't occur to me. And then I remember our first night, we actually had hotel rooms to sleep in, which is really rare. And, of course, everyone got off the bus and slept in a hotel room. And I remember I wanted to stay on the bus and sleep on the bus, even though I didn't have to. I was touring with these dudes. It was with Bob Schneider. Those dudes have been touring since I've been alive. And they were all like, you're going to stay on the bus instead of sleeping in a bed?
Like, yeah, this is the greatest thing ever.
And I was just like, yeah, dudes. I'm having fun, dude.
Yeah,
okay.
There is something about being on a bus by yourself. It's like...
No, that's totally
true. You
could
walk around. Walk around naked, don't care.
Yeah, I do that. I do that.
You got a refrigerator.
You can play loud Cannibal Corpse records and dream about killing children.
Oh, yeah.
I love that this is becoming just a comment on that Cannibal Corpse guy or guys.
I know. Totally.
All right, so in addition to preparing for all the aesthetics, the band begins rehearsing in Hayward, California. And at this point, they started to get famous enough where fans were, like, gathered outside their rehearsal halls waiting to hang out.
That had to be cool. I mean, I remember, like, in Orange County, like, years ago, like, my local band, whatever, we'd rent out a rehearsal space, and you could hear so-and-so down the hall, like, oh, shit, that's No Doubt, or whatever local band is getting popular, and, like, people start showing up, you know, so same kind of thing.
January of 86 is also when the Spastic Children was officially formed and played their first gig on January 31st at Ruthie's Inn. For those of you who don't know what Spastic Children is, it was a very strange side project with Cliff on bass, Fred Cotton on vox, James McDaniel on guitar, and our one beloved Jimmy James Jet Setter Headset Jr. on drums. And it was a punk band. They never recorded anything, but it just gave the members a chance to have fun on stage. Fred Cotton says of Spastic Children, it was an excuse to get hammered and say fuck you to people. We wanted to sound so shitty, they'd drag us off the stage with a hook. And James describes Spastic Children. He says, our only protocol was that you weren't allowed to practice, and before each gig you had to be so drunk you could hardly stand up.
Oh my gosh.
A selection of their songs were I Like Farts, Dirtbag Baby, I Need to Flush, and Bra Section.
Bra Section.
Well, they said because the bra section in like the Sears catalog was their only pornography.
Yeah, before they get their hands on actual
I had similar bouts with that in my late 20s.
Yeah, same here last week, man.
So there we go. Now we're out of January. See how easy that was, folks? January's done.
That was so easy.
We don't ever have to talk about January 1986 ever again.
I know, it's crazy. It's mind-blowing to me.
Now, in February, the note I have, these are notes I made weeks ago when I thought we were doing this episode, so I'm not quite as brushed up as I was when I wrote them, but for February, all I have is partying and rehearsing.
Yeah.
In that house on Carlson.
Which is probably very, very true.
But Lars does say, he says that for all the nights of puking and pissing and parties at the Metallica house, there were just as many of me and James making dinner, talking music, and going to bed early. Was it?
Was it?
Did you like that
pesto pasta that Lars made?
What are they making? They're making each other fucking Hot Pockets and calling it a night at 8 p.m.? I don't think so.
Streetlights came on. We should go to bed.
I guess it's bedtime. Well, James, because, you know, I think they shared a room. One room was like gear, and one room was like a room they shared. It's like, he pulls a little lamp, and he's like, Lars. Like, immediately, he's like, Lars.
Lars, are you awake?
You asleep yet? Lars, what's your favorite Tigers of Bang Tang record?
And then 5-10 minutes later, James, I can't get to sleep unless I'm tucked in.
You forgot to tuck me in. Wait, what's your favorite color? Who's your favorite Care Bear? You got a favorite
James? James, do you have a crush on anyone right now?
Yeah, Rainbow Bright. You ever have a crush on Rainbow Bright, the cartoon? Yeah.
You know how bad I wish we were friends with like a sick animator and we can animate these scenes we come up with?
Dude,
like Lars and James having a sleepover and whispering to each other.
We are a friend with a sick animator. His name's Cole Roberts. And
oh, that's right.
I was gonna reach out to Cole and see if he wanted to help us animate some shit. So this is me officially doing that because I know he listens to the show.
Well, Cole, guess what? We need your assistance in animating the Lars and James sleepover at Carlton House.
All right, so March and April is probably the most exciting little stretch for them in this month because the record comes out on March 3rd, peaked at number 29 on the U.S. Billboard 200, which was huge for a metal band with no radio.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Cliff Burstein said that when the album was released, they didn't have any way to track sales back then. So the only way to know kind of take a pulse of it was how many they shipped, which was 250,000.
Right, and that didn't really come into full effect until the early 90s,
right.
Which is mind-blowing.
The Black Album is like still the highest selling since the record scan era, right?
Yeah, totally.
But he says that they shipped 250,000, which is kind of where Lightning ended up after a year and a half of touring, so progress was being made. That was exciting. Still no radio, even though new fans are getting turned on by word of mouth, which is where this Aussie stuff comes in. So preparing for the tour, they had Rocket Cargo pick up the gear. Several days before the first show, they sent it over to the Aussie camp. So their gear, so when you do a big tour like that, if you're going to do the whole tour opening, this is what I've done opening for big bands like Zac Brown, is all of our shit just lived on their trucks.
Yeah.
And they would actually even unload our shit and throw it in a corner. And so when we would show up to the venue, our shit would all just be ready to... It wouldn't be, like, set up or pinned, but it'd be off the trucks.
Oh, yeah, it definitely, you know, the local hands would pull that crap off the truck and definitely make your day a little bit easier. You don't have to go jump in a semi-truck and unstack things and the opposite when you're loading out.
Well, and, like, you know, sometimes a lot of times support bands can't afford to have a semi. I mean, that's a huge cost. So,
yeah,
so making
sure
you're getting the gear there on time and... There's all sorts of small things like that that make a big tour like that function.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this is kind of like a movie. James and Lars decide to move out of the Carlson house to, quote-unquote, live on the road. Like, they didn't have anywhere to live, but they decided to just get out of the house before the tour started because they were like, the tour's
never going to end.
We live with Ozzy now.
Yeah.
But talk about a bucket list time machine. They threw the
Ozzy,
one last drink.
Ozzy, are you still awake?
Ozzy, did you really bite that? Did you really bite the head off of that bat that one time?
Did you really snort that line of fans?
Ozzy, are you the Prince of Darkness? Are you the devil?
Is your dad the King of Darkness?
Well, they threw their final drunken party, and James wrote on the refrigerator, "Now this house is out of season," which
awesome.
Sure was a real big joke, real big guffaw from everyone involved.
Right, yeah.
Get it? It's a lyric from Master of Puppets.
Get it? that.
Do you?
Do you?
Is it, James? I wonder if Jim listens to the show.
Does he?
Do you?
He probably heard that once and was like, oh, fuck this shit.
Fuck these fucking idiots.
I'm not going to let... I'm not going to listen to a show where these guys just use my joke every episode.
It's so true. It's so true that I love it. Okay. Band and crew fly out to Kansas a few days before the first show, and they talk about being so excited to be in the arena and seeing their, like, their stage prop for the... seeing the master puppet stage.
Yeah.
And, like, even, like, someone like Cliff, who was, you know, generally the cool one, was even kind of like, holy shit, man, this is amazing, you know?
Yeah, this is just real.
Because you can design it and mock it up, and, like, your management's telling you, yeah, we've had someone build it, and it'll be there, and it'll look great, but you don't know until you see it. It's like Stonehenge. Yeah. You get there, and it looks like...
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The tour officially begins March 27th in Wichita. Kirk remembers seeing pure shock on the faces of Ozzy fans when they played Whiplash or Damage Inc. Because Ozzy was mainstream rock at that time.
Oh, yeah, too. He for sure was. Yeah.
So they're playing.
He might have thrown in some Sabbath, but it wasn't like thrash by any means.
No. So, yeah, I'm sure they scared the hell out of them. And he talks about also, and this is something you have to learn too, maybe the hard way. I remember learning it, is like the sort of minor disillusionment of being the opener while, like, it's like when you're an opener and they're all there to see Ozzy, the place isn't full when you start playing.
Right, exactly.
The venue doesn't really fill up until, like, you're done.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. 100%.
So you're trying to just win whoever got there early, you know? One of the bass techs tells a story about how the changeover, like the getting from Ozzy's soundcheck to them starting, that sometimes they'd only had 20 minutes to put the stage together. He says the house lights would go down and he'd still be plugging in cables, just hoping he got to the finish line.
I've been there, man.
Check this out. I never knew this. Big Mick said he used to tape actual quarters to the kick drum where the beaters would hit to give it more of a tick than a thump so it would cut through the mix.
Yeah, I've heard of metal guys doing that in the studio, too.
What are these guys, like scientists? Is this Nikola Tesla up in this bitch? What I did was I invented the Tesla coil to help Lars Ulrich's drum sound better.
Yeah, exactly.
What else we got here?
Sorry,
yeah, what's going on over there?
Oh, so no, I was about to interrupt you and say that there were some sirens coming by. They just stopped, so never mind. Scratch that.
Where are you again?
St. Petersburg.
Okay. Where is that?
Florida. New Jersey.
Okay, some more few stories from the Ozzy. They talk about how they were told to avoid Ozzy because obviously they were nicknamed Alcoholica. Ozzy's trying to get clean. And this is probably one of the weirdest stories, one of the crazy stories of the whole Metallica saga, is that Sharon came knocking, looking to Cliff's room, looking for Ozzy. And Cliff's like, he's not here. Why in the world would he be here? And she's like, oh, he does this sometimes. And they found Ozzy asleep under Cliff's bed.
I know, it's so crazy.
Can you imagine just, like, hanging out in your hotel room and you find out that one of your heroes has been sleeping under your goddamn bed for hours?
Right, exactly. And Ozzy's then there going, Cliff.
Hey, Cliff.
Could you help me a pillow, please?
Throw me a pillow, mate. Could you start a pot of coffee, please? I'll be out from under your bed in a wee minute. We're like, God damn it, Ozzy, get out of here, dude.
Ozzy, what are you doing?
What are you doing? God. All right, it says, my last note here for through April is, the tour goes on, people are starting to get more excited about Metallica. The word's starting to spread, despite radio airplay, and they were, I think by the middle of the tour, they were starting their set to a full arena. Like, the tide was changing, you know?
Yeah, you know, the hype was out. The word was spreading, I'm sure, in different magazines. There were, you know, show reviews, this and that, where people were like, you have to get to the show early and see the Metallica band. So, yeah, people were catching on at this point in their history and on this tour where, yeah, like you said, the show starts, Metallica kicks off, and the arena's full.
And that doesn't always happen. I mean, you can be on a great tour, great exposure, but it just doesn't catch on because it's not a good fit or whatever. And then the tour ends and you kind of part ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When we toured with Zach Brown Band, it was like 6 months, and we were like a Radiohead indie rock band, but with a soul singer, female soul singer. And we were signed to Zach's label, and he was a big fan, so he wanted us out there, but his fans just didn't dig it.
So yeah, that happens all the time.
We just weren't really selling merch, and like, you know, there wasn't any buzz about us. It just wasn't a great fit. Anyway, so we're moving into May and August here. So from May 23rd to June 7th, they broke away from the Aussie tour and did a short headlining tour with Armored Saint, opening for the first half, and a band called The Gods, with a Z, because it's cleverer, opening the second half. And at the first show of that tour was at Kane's Ballroom, is where they actually debuted The Thing That Should Not Be Live.
Awesome. I love it. I love that I've played the same room where that song was debuted.
I know. I was just going to say the same thing. Like, I'm so cool. I'm a part of history, finally.
Yes, we did it.
Tragedy was to strike, though, at one of the three LA shows. A kid fell off the balcony and died.
Yeah, awful.
I think he died a few days later, but man, I've never had anyone die at a show I played at. That would be really weird.
Yeah, it would be really weird. And honestly, and I'm not trying to, you know, make light of this or this make this seem unimportant, but with arena shows or club shows with balconies, it surprises me that this does not happen more often.
Right.
Especially at shows that are like, people are getting shit-faced, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because when you walk up to the edge of an arena, and that railing is at like your kneecaps.
Yeah, it's true. It is true.
You know, you take a stumble and you're flipping over that thing. So
it's kind of amazing that more people don't die in general. Life is just so dangerous.
Yeah.
Every day is a miracle, Ethan. Every day is a miracle.
It really is. Every breath.
At the
every breath you take,
I'll be whispering to you in bed. Hey, Sting.
It's a miracle.
Hey, Sting. Sting.
Hey, Sting.
Were you really watching Every Breath She Took that one time, that one song?
Do you really do yoga every day?
Do you?
Do you?
Are you? At the Cow Palace show on June 17th, promoter Bill Graham had the entire Metallica dressing room lined with plastic. As a joke, the callback is to when James smashed up the dressing room on the day of Green.
Yeah.
And he had to go apologize to this big promoter. You know, he had to, like, wear the goddamn dunce cap. So as sort of a olive branch and a joke, he had the whole room wrapped in plastic, including the booze. Which is pretty, awesome. Like, they had to tear the booze out of plastic. All right. June 18th through July 4th, they were on a break at home in the Bay Area. And now, since they didn't have anywhere to live, James was living out of a hotel in Berkeley. Cliff went and lived with his parents. Kirk stayed in a hotel in Japantown. And Lars was either at Peter Minchin's in London or in New York City, which apparently started to cause a rift with the band, mostly between Lars and Cliff, but also with James and Kirk. And just because I guess the idea was when they had a break, the other three would go kind of party and be California rednecks, right? Whereas Lars was kind of more cultured and would, like, go to New York or London and do...
Right.
He came up with more money and he more prestige and shit.
Well, that, and he also, I mean, you know, we also know, too, that, like, he did so much work for the band, like, away from everybody else. Like, when he talked about, you know, getting that Aussie tour going. You know, he did all that, like, when he was over in the UK or whatever, Europe. So, you know, he might have been just... even something while he was in New York talking to somebody else about something Metallica or whatever.
And they would go, not so much Kirk, but like James and Cliff would go up to that lake house and like shoot guns and fish and fish, like catch frogs and shit. And that's just, Lars wasn't just, he wasn't into guns and macho shit like that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
All right, so now we're moving on into the Roskilde Festival, which was July 6th, where they played on a bill with Eric Clapton, Phil Collins, Madness, and Elvis Costello. One of these things
is not fit.
One of these things is not like the other.
I mean, even Phil Collins and Madness is, you know, kind of interesting. But yeah, that is so interesting. I mean, I'm sure like Cliff was probably stoked because he had the most eclectic taste in music of all the guys. Yeah.
He was probably a big Elvis Costello fan.
Oh yeah.
Well, what's weird about this festival? Kirk told a story about him and Cliff got into a fight at that show. And Cliff said he wanted to settle the fight with fisticuffs, and Kirk didn't know what that meant. Kirk had to ask him what it meant.
And he thought it was like, Are those like actual handcuffs, but they go around your knuckles or something?
Yeah, explain this to me. Like, the whole fight's over by the time they understand what fisticuffs are, but he said he said they went and tackled each other, and then they just ended up settling it with a beer. I just can't imagine them fighting. It's weird.
I know. It's so weird. Like, the two most, like, mild-mannered of the group.
Right. I mean, I love it getting so heated, like, well, you know what, dude? I think you're an asshole. You know what I think? I think we should settle this with a little bit of fisticuffs. And Kirk going, wait, what's that?
Hang on a second. What does that mean?
Yeah, can we pause being mad at each other while we find a dictionary?
How about this, man? I'm really angry right now, and we're about to fight. Can we just drink a beer instead? Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, that's, you know what? That's preferable. That sounds actually way better. Right. July 8th, they're back on the Ozzy tour in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Ozzy got pissed at Lars because Lars made a joke about his hair. Like,
his
Lars
hair
made
was
some
pretty big back then.
Yeah, his hair was crazy, and Lars made some sort of joke about, hey, you need to borrow my brush. And Ozzy got so butthurt, he wanted to have him thrown off the tour.
No, just for that. I mean, Ozzy's hair was definitely like electrical socket era, you know?
Well, he probably wasn't real happy about the fact that people were going apeshit for Metallica. I mean, they were a hard band. He said himself they were a hard band to follow.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
July 26 is when James broke his wrist skateboarding, which caused the band to cancel a show in Evansville, Indiana. John Marshall, as we all know, fills in on guitar from July 27th through September 25th. That's a lot of guitar playing for him.
Yeah, for sure.
And check this out. John Marshall's first show playing guitar for Metallica was at the Nashville Municipal Auditorium.
Amazing.
Which is, I bet it was cool back then. It's kind of a shithole now.
It's a little shitty. They've redone some of it now that the Musicians Hall of Fame is in there. But yeah. I still like that. I saw the Foo Fighters there. It was fucking awesome.
Oh, cool.
It's like you feel like you're in an arena, but with great seats
right.
anywhere, you know?
Right.
I saw Muse there. It was
oh,
awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've seen Muse a couple of times. That's a great band.
Oh, yeah. Great
shit, dude.
Band.
I saw them headline outside Lands Festival, and I was like, what? It was unbelievable. The light show and stuff and the music.
Oh, yeah. Their production's no joke.
But John Marshall was so... He stood off stage, and he said he wouldn't even change his clothes.
That's
I'm like,
so
dude...
funny. They're like...
Well, I don't think they asked him to. I think he wanted to. Like, I'm like, hey...
He's nervous? Like, I don't want to be on stage in front of that many people.
Maybe so. Because I feel like, man, if I'm feeling in for Metallica, opening for Ozzy, I'm putting on a black t-shirt, and I'm going out on that goddamn stage.
Yes, absolutely.
Come on.
Get out there.
The Ozzy tour finally ends on August 3rd in Hampton, Virginia, and the Ozzy crew took apart as a prank. You know, the last show of a tour, there's usually a prank. Ozzy's crew took Lars's drum kit apart while he was playing.
I've done that before. It's so fun.
And then Metallica went out and did Paranoid with the band, but they had big towels wrapped around them that made it look like diapers. Because let's face it, they were still children.
Dude, people that like go to like especially arena shows, they have no idea what it's like on tour, and then people perform tour pranks on one another. Had to have been so confused in Virginia, like, what the fuck are they doing to Lars's kid?
Yeah, what's happening?
Why are they wearing diapers?
I'm sure everyone was laughing though and having a good time.
Yeah.
Sadly though, that diaper show is the last U.S. show that Cliff would play before he passed away.
Yeah, crazy, man.
I thought this was a funny story. So dude, this story is hilarious. At an after party at that show, Kirk and Cliff were sitting with Ozzy, okay? Ozzy was kind of holding court. And Ozzy was telling them how much he loved their band. He was giving them advice. He told them to stick to your guns. Never turn your back on your audience. It says, and then he immediately turned and lobbed the bottle of wine he was drinking across the room. Listen here, mate, stick to your guns, never turn your back on your audience. And then he just throws a bottle of wine across the room.
Amazing. And always throw a bottle of wine.
And always throw a bottle of wine after you give advice.
Always.
All right, we're moving right along this year. Ethan and I both have things to get to today. Are we doing it too fast?
No, I think we're all right.
Okay then.
Yeah,
after the bottle throwing incident, the boys had 3 weeks off at home, where spastic children were going to play more legendary shows at the beloved Ruthie's Inn. We don't have a lot of evidence of all this, and I imagine it's best left to the imagination.
I don't know. I would love to have a live recording of Broth Section,
dude. I think you can find. I think there was the first show they played at Ruthie's Inn. I think you can find audio of it on YouTube.
Yeah, I think we tried to look at that a while back, but I'll have to look it up again.
What's everyone saying to me? Okay. Okay, September. The European headlining tour with Anthrax begins in Cardiff, Wales on September 10th. Cliff barely made the flight, as usual.
Yeah, he loved doing that.
I love
that.
How just cavalier he was about all that. Just barely making the flights and shit.
Yeah, don't worry, man. I'll be there.
James played his first show back on guitar September 26th in Stockholm. According to the story, John Marshall was getting pretty ground down by playing guitar, doing double duty, right? Being guitar tech,
yeah.
Playing guitar. And, dude, they toured for most of this year, starting in March.
Yeah.
And I think he was just getting fucking worn out. So
for
he ended up telling, I think he told management, like, hey, like, I really want to help the guys, but I'm feeling sick. Like, I got to be done. James heard about it and was like, fuck it, I'm ready to do it. Let's just take the cast off. I think he did it earlier than he was told to by his doctors, but...
Yeah.
He felt ready, and, you know, Kirk talks about what a big moment that was, because when he broke his arm, they never knew if he would play again.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's no joke. When you break your arm, especially your wrist, I mean, there's a lot of, I hate to use the word motion in your wrist, but you know what I mean? Though it's like...
Yeah.
If you break something right there, it could heal weird, heal incorrectly, and you couldn't play the same again, you know. So thankfully, old Jimmy James said, Junior Senior Esquire is, he's back.
Yeah. And, you know, him taking that time off and, like, letting John play guitar is a big reason that it healed well, too. I mean, some dudes probably like, fuck it. But really taking that time to take care of yourself is really important. Now, unfortunately, on September 27th, the day after James picks his guitar back up, is when Cliff passes away, the horrific bus accident that we all know about. We've talked about a lot on our Cliff episode, on our Back to the Front episode, on our Master of Puppets episode. So we won't dwell too much in that. Terrible bus accident. Cliff was thrown out of the window. The bus actually fell on him a second time, which is what they think actually killed him. You know.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, everyone knows the story, and we've seen it a million times behind the music and heard about it, read about it. It's never going to not be awful and sad.
Now, the silver lining, if we can even dare call anything like that, is that this is the part of the story where my favorite bass player enters our story. Jason Newsted, right?
Ron McGovney. Oh, sorry.
He auditions within a few weeks of Cliff's funeral. We all know those stories, too. The band was grieving, didn't know how to grieve. Management wanted them back up and running, thought it would be best for them. Cliff would have wanted us to keep going, blah, blah, blah. I have a clip here, pretty long clip, but it's pretty detailed, of Jason talking about auditioning for Metallica. And so I'm going to insert that right here, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's hear it.
How would you describe the vibe in the room when you walked in, like Jason from Flotsam and Jetsam walks in with his bass?
You know, because of the playing field that we found ourselves on, an incredible, very special person, Jimi Hendrix of bass, in my opinion, was taken. And so way, 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 way too early. And his fate brought about my destiny. And that's a really, it's tough ground to stand on. And it was very surreal to begin with because Metallica is my favorite band and I get a chance to go play with them. And so already I'm levitating, my head's spinning. It's just a crazy thing. In the room itself, in the building itself, was very tense and somber and a bit sad and those kind of things. And everybody was considerably inebriated. I think that, you know, I auditioned maybe 27 or 28 days after Cliff actually was killed, probably 2 weeks after they spread his ashes up north in California, you know, that I was actually in the room playing out of his amp, you know. So it was a weird vibe, and they went to bed drinking, waking up drinking. You know, it's just the way it was. They were trying to grieve and not knowing how to do 23 and 24-year-old men that had no idea or, like, really any kind of serious family structure within any of those persons' lives in order to build that kind of capacity where you could know what to do when it was time to grieve about something serious like this. Nobody had that. Nobody would have known about that or was taught that.
It was
that.
someone from their gang.
It was their teacher. You know, Cliff was the one everybody else looked up to in that band. Every band has a person that they look up to.
Yeah.
Or the leader or the thing like that, the gifted one. He was the gifted one. Even amongst people like Hammett and Hetfield, he was still the gifted one.
Yeah,
so that's pretty heavy. And so he taught them a lot of things through time. And so to have that teacher and that great admired one taken away like that was pretty heavy. They didn't care about anybody else. I could have been made of freaking plutonium and walked in there, and they wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
You know, it just didn't matter. They didn't want anybody standing over there other than their boy.
Yeah.
And so, and the powers that be and the things that were going on, they're trying to keep the momentum going and the machine going and making up for Ozzy shows and all the things that had to be, that were committed to, that had to be achieved or had to be resolved. They wanted to keep going. So you had to imagine how their heads were spinning, crazy, grieving, ugly, and trying to accept somebody for a second and see if I'm even making a judgment of somebody that could play with or not.
Yeah.
And some cats came in there that could play, you know. But I got there first on the day that I, the first day, day I auditioned, I got there first early in the morning before they got there, probably like 9 in the morning. And I waited all day. Lars wanted to have me play last. That was already his intention because he knew that I had, you know, because of the things that we talked about, tape trading and correspondence throughout the world, when he reached out, see what's going on, my name come up with a lot of people. So he wanted to have me go last. So I waited and watched all the guys coming through the doors and come from the airport and get out of the airport, walk on with their bass, and look through the window and watch what James' reaction was to them. I had this little cubby hole dug out within their road cases. There's like Metallica cases all around me. But, cats would come in, and a lot of people heard this story before, but it's really pretty crazy. I remember one guy, I don't know where he was from, but it's all the way from the East Coast, so he flew all the way across the United States from one side to the other to the Bay Area, water to water like that. And spent the whole day on the freaking plane. Brought his bass in, and he walks in, and because of his attire and his do and so forth, like fringe on the boots and three color hair and this kind of stuff.
Wow.
And Hetfield's already in like
strong look.
8 or 10 Coors Lights into the afternoon, you know. And he looks over at this guy, you know. He's like, next. Dude didn't even get to plug in. Dude, he flew all the way. You know, he'd been losing sleep and trying to learn the songs, and his head's all coming over. He gets there, steps in the room, doesn't even get to plug in.
Brutal.
Has to turn right back out the door and go back and get on the plane and fly the way home.
Jeez.
That was a long flight home.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So there was a few of those things like that. And there was a couple of cats that I thought did really good that didn't get called back. I was kind of surprised. I was fine with it, of course.
Yeah.
Surprised that they didn't get called back. So Troy Gregory and Les, I think, and myself, and one other guy, Willie Lang from Laz Rocket, got called back. Halloween of 86, October 31, 86, I played the last show with Flotsam and Jetsam and loaded my SVT and my rig and all my stuff into my old Ford truck and drove back to the Flotsam house where we all lived together and loaded the stuff back in there. Everybody knew I'd already joined Metallica at that time. I'd been asked to play with Metallica, not joined yet.
Right.
Been asked to play with Metallica. And we're all wearing black armbands for Cliff that night. And, load my gear in and out of the thing. 9 or 10 days later, sold out Budokan with Metallica. So it's like, I went from this to holy and about fast.
All right. So he's talking about, them being hammered and grieving because they lost what he called, quote unquote, their teacher. Everyone looked up to Cliff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And just, man, those stories about the dude coming all the way there and just because he didn't look right, they're telling him, nope. He's got to take the flight of shame all the way back to where he's from.
I know, crazy.
So
he just didn't look right, so, see you later.
Well, and, it's a pretty good call. You can't have a guy that doesn't look right.
Yeah, exactly. I've lost out on gigs for that. Well, too many tattoos, whatever.
Right. And I'll never know what gigs I didn't get because I look the way I look, or because I'm an atheist, or because I'm a badass motherfucker. I don't know. They couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle the sauce.
Yeah.
You never know.
I wouldn't hire you based upon the fact that you're a badass motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that a lot.
I figured,
Mostly from my wife and my parents.
Yeah.
Jason joins Metallica officially on October 28th. And let's see, through November and December. November 8th is his first show, which was a secret show opening for Metal Church. And November 9th was another show opening for Metal Church, and there was a power failure during Master Puppets, which was the second song, which one might interpret as a bit of an omen. I'm sure they didn't. How about you're in Metal Church, and, you're just trying to be another band in the goddamn tall shadow of Metallica, and they're like, look, we need to test this new guy out. We don't want a lot of people to make a big fuss. We're going to open for you two nights in a row. The guys in Metal Church are like, what?
Like, great.
No,
I was
dude.
Leave after.
Well, they didn't know. No one knew, though. No one knew. The people were there to see Metal Church.
It's true, yeah, that's true. But if word got out a little bit, though.
But even if they didn't leave, it's like you're going to blow it out your ass for 90 minutes, and then we're supposed to play Plinkety Plink Plink?
Exactly.
I don't think better so, put some dude.
Better put some quarters on the beaters, your kick drum pedals.
Maybe some silver dollars.
Yeah, seriously.
November 15th, the boys are playing Japan. Well, it's the 15th through the 20th. They do like a little run there. And then the 26th through the 20th, the band played a bunch of kind of like a bunch of one-off new North American shows with the correct order of Metal Church opening for them. And that's kind of how they finished out the year. So,
right.
So they had all these European plans, but they had to cancel them just because Cliff died. But if Cliff hadn't passed away, that would have been a really solid year of touring the shit out of Puppets.
Oh, absolutely it would have, yeah. I mean, I would even dare to say, let me say this. I wonder if because Metallica had this buzz going from the Ozzy tour, Puppets was doing well. I wonder if, in a roundabout way, maybe Cliff's death kind of helped catapult that record even more, where it was big news in the metal world and people were like, oh my gosh, like, and maybe people who hadn't heard of Metallica were like, oh my gosh, this bass player from this big metal band passed away. Who was the band? And everyone starts kind of discovering Metallica the first time because of that. You hear that happening often when, like, you know, a singer of a band dies and all of a sudden the record sales go up, you know?
Right.
I don't know if that's the case for sure, but it's, you know, it's very possible that, you know, Cliff's death is almost like, you know, passing the torch to continue on and make it bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right. Well, that's definitely what they did with it. You know, that's definitely how they took that energy and just, you know, how they siphoned it back into the machine, which I think worked for them.
Right.
And I do think that was in the spirit of what Cliff would have wanted.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
And, you know, I like it. It's like, of course, him dying is absolutely fucking horrific and tragic. And
of course.
What could have been's are insurmountable. But obviously that is what happens, so you got to move forward. And to me, it's cool. I can't think of a better dude to come in after Cliff than Jason.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because he has so much love and respect for it. You know, he said before he considers Cliff the Jimi Hendrix of the bass guitar. So,
he had the right. Yeah, he saw him in person and, like, was up front, like, watching Cliff play when he was younger. You know, it's like, yeah, he had nothing but the utmost respect for Cliff and what he contributed to that band as a performer, as a writer, as a friend, as a brother. And so, you know, maybe it took him a little while longer, which would be, you know, after the hazing phase. But, I mean, he's straight up, you know, he's the dude after that. There's no denying Jason's role in that band.
Well, I, of course, agree with that. And but I was wondering, Megadeth also had a big year in 86, right? What was the big record that came out in 86 for them?
86, So Far So Good So What, I think?
And was that a big record for them? It's Peace Sells But Who's Buying?
Yeah. That's a record called Peace Sells But Who's Buying. But what's cool is on So Far So Good So What, there's a song called In My Darkest Hour, which Dave Mustaine wrote for Cliff.
Okay. Well, the reason I bring up Dave, well, first of all, he made news again this week because he's come out again talking about the No Left to Leather box set, claiming that he has text messages between him and Lars. Lars wants 10% credit on two songs. They're saying it's Phantom Lord and Metal Militia, and Dave's not going to give it to him. He also has been on quite the Twitter spree.
He definitely has. By the way, quick side note, Pete Sells was 86.
Yeah. Okay. Well, should we go dip in and on a little segment called Dave Mustaine Reads Dave Mustaine's Tweets?
I'm a huge fan of this segment, so please let it roll.
All right, let's check it out.
Yo, me, meet the real me. I'm Dave Mustaine, and this is Dave Mustaine Reads Dave Mustaine's Tweets.
Hi, David. Thanks for coming back and sitting with me while we read some of your tweets. You have a reputation as being a very reasonable, open man, so I'm just really glad to be here. Okay, well, let's get into it. At Rockfeed News says, I could beat you at arm wrestling, Dave. I'm 90% sure.
Okay, just wear a mouth guard for when I accidentally kick you in the face. I'm 100% sure.
Don O'Brien says, Any truth in these new Clash of the Titans rumors?
What am I, a mind reader? Do you want to be a little more helpful?
At Cosmo says, oh, come on. Don't be so close-minded about music.
Piss off.
At Slayer says, hey, Dave, did you like the This Is America video from Childish Gambino or Isn't Your Type?
Well, I don't know what that is, and if it's not metal, I probably never will.
Dave, I heard you were pretty good at math. Did someone tweet at you about math?
By the way, the equation I was asked to solve yesterday either has a typo or the person doesn't know what he's talking about. You see, you need two more equations with Z, W, Y. Put the first equation relative to Z, the second relative to W, and the third relative to Y.
Iron Maiden Girl says, love your attitude, David.
Well, I'm sorry for being testy, but with 900K followers, we all get along because I don't take shit from anyone, and almost all of us hate trolls that much, I know.
Rose-colored Jerboy says, James wrote Motor Breath.
Well, I think the original songwriter, Hugh Tanner, not James, you educated rube, would disagree.
At Jose Maria Bravo says, I saw you while leaving Mexico a few weeks ago, but you were with Pam, so I thought it was better to respect your privacy. Hopefully I'll get to talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, and your courtesy and respect will be rewarded. I'll add you to my prayers tonight for your life, health, and prosperity, and that you'll meet me soon. Yeah, I just prayed that you would meet me.
At Water4323 says, pretty sure David Mustaine wrote Jump in the Fire 1977.
Thank you, Scott. I wrote that song during 1975 and 76. It was summer break, and I was getting ready for my 15th birthday that my mom's cult of religious brainwashers wouldn't let me celebrate anyway.
At Kirsting Limo says, whoa, Iron Maiden was formed in 1976.
At the risk of suggesting you're semi-intelligent, 1961 plus 15 equals 1976. I wrote the song when I was 15. Enjoy being blocked.
Well, David, this has been really fun listening to you be mean to people on Twitter. Thanks for taking the time, David. Dad!
Hello, me. It's me again. I hope you enjoyed my tweet reading. It's my misfits way of life. Nice story. Tell it to the Reader's Digest.
Well, there you have it. He's an angry man. He's an angry man with a Twitter account.
I've said it before, and I've said it to Clint in private. I love Megadeth. I love him to death, dare I say. However, I have kind of started to dub him the Donald Trump of metal.
Right.
Well, he just says anything he wants for it, like whether it's insulting or not, and it, Even if he is in the wrong and gets called out by other people on Twitter, he just goes, I'm not going to listen to trolls. It's like the equivalent of fake news.
Dude, you are a troll. You're the biggest troll in the world.
He totally is.
Well, I have the text messages. Do you?
Do you?
All right. Well, that was 1986. Good God, Ethan. I can't tell you how nice it was to do another one of these episodes with you. I missed you.
I know, and I really wish that, like, we could actually, well, we're going to do this in person very soon. Thank God.
I think next week we will.
Yeah. Like I said, as people are listening to this episode, it is Memorial Day and I am back home grilling some cannibal corpses on my barbecue and celebrating America. And I'm home about to start my record with Paul Moak, and Clint and I will be back in HQ1 together.
Yeah. And we appreciate all you out there bearing with us the last 2 weeks. We appreciate any and all of you who send us funny emails or encouraging emails, kind emails. We're over all the socials, the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We love this podcast, and it's been a challenging month, but we got through it, and we really appreciate all the support. So if you like the show and you haven't already, consider going and leaving us a positive iTunes review. Goes a long way. Only takes a second. Go check out the Patreon. Consider getting on the ride at that level. Makes everything better, and we've found all sorts of cool ways to make that worth your while, to give you value for value. And is there anything else to say, Ethan?
I do want to say one thing real quick. As of 20 minutes ago, my Kickstarter campaign ended, and I just wanted to say a quick thank you to anyone that listens to the Metal Hits Podcast show that contributed to it. I saw a lot of familiar names that donated to it, so I cannot thank you guys enough. I'm really excited to start this record. And Thank you for contributing what you could and making it totally possible for me to do this.
Very cool, dude. Congrats. I know thanks, myself, man. Myself included, we're all excited to hear that record.
Well, I want Clint to play some fucked up ambient through tape delay shit on there somewhere.
I think I'm going to write some lyrics about eating the entrails of children. Can I somehow foist that upon you?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, we're going to sign off here. Thanks again to all of you out there who support the show. We'll see you on the flip-flop, right?
Yes, we will.
All right, let's go ahead and say peace.
Adios.
Adios, Ozzy. Ethan. Are you asleep yet? Hey, Ethan, peace. Hey, peace.
Adios.
Well, it looks like they made it. But I hope Clint and Ethan remember one thing. Time and death wait for no man. Oh.